All right, so we're going to get started. Everything's okay in the back there? Okay. All righty. So welcome to the last day of the conference at 8:30 a.m. So you guys are truly dedicated to information protection. Hopefully you're in the right session. This is data loss prevention, specifically in Microsoft Exchange and Outlook 2013. My name is Asaf Kashi. I'm a group program manager in the information protection group at Microsoft, a part of Exchange, as you can see by our lovely shirts. To my left is Jack Abad. Go ahead and introduce.
Sure. My name is Jack Abad. I'm a lead program manager focused on DLP and policy within Exchange and our email flow.
All right. And before we get started, I figured I'd ask the room by show of hands, and we're only going to do this in the beginning, so you won't have to answer questions throughout. How many people here have already thought about and understand at least the basics of DLP? When I say DLP, you understand that it's data loss prevention. You know about what it's about. Show of hands, okay. All right. Of those people, or out of everyone, how many people have actually tried a DLP product or have deployed, either successfully or unsuccessfully, any DLP product, Microsoft or otherwise? Show of hands again. Okay, slightly smaller set. And then finally, how many people have actually looked at the Microsoft DLP solution in Exchange and Outlook 2013, or even tried to deploy it? Okay, all right. So that was a dwindling set as expected, and I think we started with about maybe a third to half of the room saying that they understand DLP and going down from that. Very good. So let's get started. Why do we care about DLP? What is DLP? And how does it show up in our day-to-day in the business world for us? In general, you can see there's two quotes on the screen, and one of them says, large retailer leaks payment information via email, an accidental email with attachment exposed hundreds of individuals' names and social security numbers, or if you're in the non-US part of the world, it could be a national health ID or some other important piece of information. We've seen countless numbers of these kinds of quotes in the media. And the idea here, there's two aspects to it. One is the basic notion that information protection is important, and it's something that we're focusing on to help you, give you the tools, give you the systems to allow you to protect it. And the second half is a little less obvious from this, but it's about more of the accidental. If you look at these two specific quotes, it's about the accidental disclosure, and in this case, around messaging, around email. And the idea is you can have an aspect of information protection that is all about the security side of the house, the malicious loss of information, or the hacker type of persona, the rogue admin. And then you can have the aspect where the employee themselves, or a vendor, or a contractor, or a partner, someone who doesn't really understand and knows all the rules of the company that they're working in fully. They haven't read the 800-page handbook, and they actually don't know what they're doing. They don't know that they're abusing the policy unintentionally, accidentally. So when we looked at DLP and data loss prevention in messaging specifically, we wanted to make sure that we actually address both of those. And contrary to many of our competitor solutions and so forth, we actually focused on the accidental, because in talking to many of you and many customers represented both by you and other folks that have been working with us, they've actually came back and said, look, I do trust my employee. They just don't know that they're actually breaching my information security barrier in many cases. So today we're going to talk through the solution. We're going to cover both the security side of the house. We're going to talk about the policies. We're going to talk about how do we manage it, how do we audit it, where does it show up, how do we get reports out of it. We're also going to talk about a lot about where does it manifest for the information worker, for the end user, if you choose to configure it. Everything that I talk about today is available both in Office 365, in messaging in the cloud as the service, as well as Exchange 2013 on-prem, with the Outlook 2013 client showing the end user pieces. You're probably asking, what are you talking about as far as end user pieces? We'll definitely cover that, and we'll cover that early. We have two large demo sets because everybody loves demos, and we'll make this a little more interactive. So if there's a burning question, just raise your hand, and I'll kind of notice that, and we'll make sure that we hit that along the way. So moving along, at a high level, thinking about data loss prevention in Office 2013 from the Exchange perspective, from the messaging perspective, we broke it apart into three areas. There is identify, monitor, and protect. Along with those, you can see on the bottom right of the little square graphic, there's end user education. And we'll talk a lot about that as we go along, because it kind of crosses the entire gamut of these areas. So when we think about identify, it's really the first step. When you're talking about information security, what is the information you're trying to secure? Is it all information, or is it just the sensitive information? How do you define sensitive information? How does the next company, the next customer, or how does your partner in your business define sensitive information? All of those might be different from one company to another, and many times it's about the risk assessment that you want to make. One type of information might be super sensitive to a financial customer versus a healthcare might really care a lot more about something else versus a third company who might actually be in all of those businesses and they care about all of it equally. What we provided for the identify part of this is both the content identification via a classification engine that we actually run both in the server or service as well as in the client, and we'll talk about in detail about that, as well as the context, the ability to think about where did this information come from, who wrote it, who was the author, who's the recipient. So the context of information is equally as important as the content of the information. And we do cover both of those. And again, the end user education comes into play here, where not only do we need to detect it, not only do we need to understand where it's coming from, where is it going, we need to be able to explain that to an end user who is not a security professional. They're not part of the chief information security officer's organization or the IT pro organization, if there's one function that covers the back end of this. So we needed to provide a way to bring this down to every information worker and make sure that their productivity does not get impacted. Second part here in these three parts is the monitoring. The point of information security, in many cases, besides not letting it out, is also to be able to attest to that, to a third party. In almost all regulated industries, almost all companies that have to comply with any kind of regulation, they actually don't only have to comply, they also have to have some kind of evidence to be able to attest to some auditor, to some third party, or kind of a separate body to be able to say, yes, I've complied, and here is how I've complied, both operationally, as well as here are the results of what's been happening. We've provided you both with the auditing capabilities in the product, as well as the tools around that, the abilities to connect to a third-party ticketing system, or the ability to send this via email to other locations and other entities, such as a governing body or an auditor or so forth. The third piece is the protect. Now, when I say protect, I bet that for some portion of you, that means one specific thing, or that means one or two specific things. But the interesting thing is it actually means something different to everyone. It really depends on how your organization, how your company thinks about protecting its information. In some cases, protecting messaging information is about blocking it. Very, solid DLP solutions just say, once I find it, I don't allow it to continue. I don't allow it to move on. So obviously blocking is an action. Ability to quarantine it, put it aside, inspect it later. Ability to ask someone else for approval. Ability to encrypt it. All of those are the protection actions. And we provide the tools for that. We provide that in the system itself, as well, again, as the end user education and being able to say, great, now let's make sure we explain it to the end user. Because at the end of the day, the information worker, I'll use those terms interchangeably, the end user and the information worker, those are pretty much the persona that is generating the information that you are trying to protect. That persona is the one that we should not impede any of its productivity, right? So at the end of the day, I want to explain to them what's going to happen so they can take an action. I never want to be in a situation where someone writes that really important message, attaches the quarterly financials document that their entire department worked on, sends it out on that Friday afternoon, but they happen to put maybe a vendor on the to line, and you have configured a very strong, compliant DLP solution to block that on the back end. But since there was no warning to that end user, they didn't know that was going to happen. They hit send, and that end of week for them, they went home. They happened to get an NDR or a response sometime later, or maybe they didn't get any information. They come in Monday, and nothing went. So they have failed. We failed at not helping them prevent them from being embarrassed, prevent them from completing their job. But at the same time, we were compliant. So a lot of solutions today focus on just the compliance side. We're actually focusing on both sides of the equation. The rest of the deck and the process will go, the presentation will be much faster. There's much fewer marketing-related slides on here. So let's immediately jump into a demo. I've talked a little bit about what this is. Let's take a look at it.
Jack. Thanks, Asaf. That's right. So a great way to kind of put a little bit more context to what Asaf was just talking about to dive right into the demo. So what I have here is actually, you have to pretend I'm Sarah Davis, a little bit of a change. And I'm an employee of Contoso Exports. Contoso Exports is actually using our Office 365 service. So everything you're going to see me do here is as if I'm a service customer. At the same time, all the capability is also available on-prem. So or in a hybrid environment. So all the capability we'll be showing is available across the three different modalities. So Sarah is an information worker. She uses Outlook as her productivity tool, comes in, and as part of her work, she interacts with a bunch of vendors. She's working with Tony from external, and she needs to send him a set of files that actually will allow him to process part of chargebacks for the work she's working with him. So as you saw, as I started typing, one of the things is first you saw a notification that the Tony is an external. And that's something that we've had for a while, and just notifying you that you're going to send mail to somebody who's outside your organization. The other thing that you might have noticed is something new, something that appeared up top called a policy tip. And this is actually something that is part of our DLP solution, where we're actually integrated our classification engine. This is the part of the identifying the content right into Outlook. So what does that mean? That means that as I'm actually working and creating my content in Outlook, the engine is running in the background, analyzing both the content in the messages and the attachments, evaluating it against a set of policies that you configure, so you get to define what is the sensitive content and how should the system respond to identifying that content. So if you think about it, you're really defining is what is the risk and then what do I do with that risk? And in this case, what we have is a rule that will look for credit card numbers. This organization may be on the PCI DSS or some other specific compliance regulation that needs to be evaluated. And here, the system has churned through the attachments and identified as a list of credit cards and provided what we call a notification tip that allows the user to basically, think of it as almost as a warning, but it's really an education experience of saying, hey, there's something about this message that you should know. As you hover over the policy tip, we'll actually push out the details of what was detected. We detected credit card numbers. At this point, the user can actually report this and say, you know what, this is actually a false positive. These are not credit card numbers. Probably not quite true with credit card numbers because our detections are more than just looking for regexes. In terms of credit cards, and Asaf will talk about this in more detail, but in terms of things like credit cards, we will actually check the checksum algorithm, look for additional corroborative information that this is actually credit cards, and only at that point push out a verdict that says this is a credit card. So in this case, Sarah has also noticed that, you know what, I actually have two files that I need to attach for Tonya to process. So she goes back and attaches another file and completes her email. And again, as she's composing her email, you see that our notification to the end user has changed. And in this case, it's a little bit of a stronger message saying, you can't actually send this information. So if I go now and actually try to send the data as Sarah, I'll get a message that says, and I'm not sure how easy that's to read, but basically that the policy is preventing you from sending this information. But one of the core beliefs in our system and in our design is the fact that we don't want end users to be blocked. First of all, we want to make the IT organization in control, so you get to define what policies apply. But if you have the right level of control, you can also grant the end users the ability to participate in that story. So here, we have allowed Sarah, again, based on a certain level, to make a decision that she still needs to proceed with performing this operation. So in this case, she has an option to override. If you click on override, you get a dialog where Sarah gets to put in some business justification that will later be audited for her to continue with her operation. This is important because Sarah now, A, can make the decision, but at the same time, she realizes that she has skin in the game. There's actually something that's being audited, and she needs to think twice, is this really what I want to be able to do? In this case, Sarah will proceed. Override the message, and send it. Now, Sarah, at the same time, is also working within her organization with her legal team. So she's going to compose exactly the same message, except this time it's going to be Tony, and this other Tony is within her organization. So this is Tony who works in accounts receivable. He just needs to be paying attention that the vendor actually produces the results. So in this case, she's going to go ahead and attach exactly the same set of files. So in here, we see we've attached exactly the same content. The engine, again, is running in the background, analyzing the data. But in this case, even though we've provided the full set of messages, the same content that has generated a strong override, here we just get a policy tip notification. Again, I can hover over this and discover what is in the content and how potentially I should act around it. The key aspect is, we're not just tied to what is the content. We actually integrate with what is the context of the operation. So the way the system's configured, and this is, again, something that the administrator has decided to configure this way, so you're in full control, is to provide a different set of capabilities for people I'm working with externally versus people I work with internally. Now, the system is very flexible in terms of you being able to decide, you know what, I'm going to have a different set of policies for my sales department. I'm going to have a different set of policies for my HR department. I'm going to have a different set of policies for people who are in one country versus another part of my subsidiary, which is in another country. So this is kind of the integration within Outlook, providing the rich end-user education that Asaf has been referring as well. So what do you guys think? Pretty cool.
They're speechless.
All right, there's a lot of heads nodding. So if we continue on, Sarah actually is also, you know, she left the weekend, and given that she's a mobile worker, she's actually using OAuth to communicate with her clients. And you know what? She realized, you know what? I actually have more files I forgot to send to Tony. So she goes to OAuth. She again sends a message to Tony. She's going to insert the same files, now this time in her mobile application. Now, as you can see here, we actually don't have the policy dips integrated right into the client experience. So she's going to go ahead and just send the message, hoping everything went right. And again, because we didn't have the strong integration, there wasn't real feedback of what's going on. But as you can see, the system still generated a message. In this case, she gets an NDR saying that she couldn't proceed and send this information. At the same time, if you read, the NDR allows her to override this in a different experience, but still not block her from continuing. Again, this is purely driven from the configuration that the organization has decided to roll out. So in this case, we're going to say click here to resend it. We're going to put our override keyword and send this off. And again, Sarah is able to continue her work, interaction with the vendor. She can now continue and have the rest of her weekend and is not blocked by the organizational policy. And this is, again, the kind of flexibility we allow you to tailor to your organization for things to move forward. Thanks.
All right, let's switch back. So as I promised, I'll take questions. Before we do that, I do want to make sure that we are going to cover all of the configuration that Jack has shown. So we're actually going to flip in a later demo as well as in the slides to show you how all of the magic was done. And we'll cover all of which clients are allowed, et cetera. So those kinds of things will be throughout the deck. I don't know if that changes the questions. There's one up here. So the question was, if Sarah had put the override in the original message, would it have allowed it through? And the answer is yes. And to add to that, the override is configurable in a way where you, as the administrator, can decide what that override is. You can decide on whether it's a keyword. You can decide whether it's something in the body, in the subject, whether it's by sending to another user in addition to just audit it, or to know that the user's intent has been recorded. So any which way that happens, once a user does it once or twice, they would get trained, or at the same time, when you roll out material to train them about this particular override, if you're using a down-level client or a client that does not have policy tips integration. To add to that, our goal is to increase the number of and types of clients that have the rich policy tips integration. Obviously, starting with Outlook 2013 as a premier messaging productivity tool was one of our initial goals.
Now, just one more thing to add. You're fully in control, and if you don't want the override experience from other clients, you can actually set a configuration that will prevent that from happening. And again, we'll show that there's a specific rule to allow this override to occur from other clients, and you may choose not to provide that to your end users. But given the theme of the presentation, which is really about accidental disclosures, the scenarios we wanted to show are ones where the end user is not blocked, but can proceed. At the same time, you can easily configure the system where if we found more data, you may not allow override at all. You may just block the whole experience from occurring.
Okay. There's a question back there. In this particular,
sure, and the override is one example of. So the question is, does the message actually go out to the end destination with the override in the heading or in the subject? In this case, the example is yes. But again, the override is something that's just a rule of how we decided to allow the override capability. You may have a very different mechanism of being able to achieve this to actually have a different mechanism that doesn't put something in the subject.
OK, and we'll take the last question, then we'll move on up front. So the question is, does the language of the NDR follow the language of the mailbox server? Yes. So everything that you've seen that is additive from a policy policy tips as well as information security perspective has been localized. So you can have the policy tip that shows up in Outlook, the NDR, et cetera, the message in the NDR. And I think you'll highlight it. I don't think we're actually going to show a different message, but there are. He'll show where you can go and configure it. So you can create a rule for any language that Office supports, basically, that Exchange supports.
And the policy tips that were shown in Outlook, the little messages, are also fully customizable across all the languages, but you get to control what message you may want to put in there to make something very tailored to the kind of users that you have in your organization.
Okay, let's move on. And there'll be more time to ask questions as well. So just to recap what we've seen. We've seen the user, the power of the user education. It's really to empower the user to participate in the conversation around how does my organization do risk management. It's fully configurable. I know some folks immediately say, well, there is no place in my organization for the end user to participate. And there's at least half the session that caters specifically just to the back end, so that's for you. And then there's the other half of the audience that really thinks about, well, maybe we can invite the user to participate. Maybe it's only about education and not override. So again, everything that we've shown is configurable, and it is about providing that contextual policy exactly in context of what the user is doing, exactly at the time of their action. So they take an action, and they see the result, and you can then train their behavior over time to support instead of try to circumvent the organizational policy. Because if all we do is block and provide them and actually prevent them from doing their work, they will find other ways that you might not be auditing potentially today, whether it's a cell phone camera, a USB thumbstick, an egress point, you know, on the web through another provider, a consumer service, et cetera. We've heard all of the different ones. And instead of going down the approach of saying we're going to block everything, we decided to empower them and provide you with the controls and the auditing along the way. So, at a high level, how does our system work? So this is a very high level, somewhere between, I would probably call this a marketecture slide. So there's a little bit of a hint of almost an architecture slide. So you see at the top there's an admin and information workers on the bottom. The admin is authoring the policy, and that's either policy that they're initiating or policy that was handed to them and said from a compliance type of officer or organization. They and put that policy in the Exchange server or in the Office 365 service in Exchange Online. And then that policy is available for the Outlook clients to pull down in a very efficient manner. So we're not pushing down to every client you have, and it doesn't happen all the time. There's a very efficient pull mechanism here. And this works very similarly to how mail tips have been working since Exchange 2010. So for those of you who are familiar with that and have enabled that in your organization, this is built on the same distribution mechanism, but obviously a little more robust and extensible. Once the policy is on the client evaluation can happen in order to provide the end user with a contextual policy feedback and education in real time, and then the mail goes out. So it's pretty straightforward. On the back end, we obviously provide another point of processing those policies, because at the end of the day, we really focus on that contextual policy without blocking the end user, without reducing their productivity. What that does mean, and every session or every once in a while I get this question, so I'll just answer it here. If the user had a mail or the equivalent of a mail ready with all of the sensitive information, with a couple of attachments or a really large body in a Word document, let's say, or in a notepad, and they open an Outlook message and type the two line and then grabbed all that information, pasted it in and immediately hit send or immediately hit control enter, which is the keyboard shortcut. So they did this in microseconds, not even a whole second. We would not block, we would not stop the user, spin the cursor, or say, hold on, we need, you know, half a second or a second to process. If the user is running, you know, just pasting it in, the goal of that client experience is really to enhance their productivity, not to slow them down. On the server side, the goal of the experience is security. So on the server side, we will run that policy, and as you'll see, it's as part of transport rules, as part of the transport pipeline. So there is no, hey, I ran it, you know, I sent my mail so fast that I got around the policy. On the client side, again, we don't want to ever hold them up. We don't want to ever have the customer wait because somebody turned on a DLP system. So that was never the intent, and therefore those were the goals, the performance goals from an experience perspective. And then finally, everything is audited. Just like we talked, the identify, monitor, and protect. If you want to monitor, you need to audit, and you need to provide abilities to generate reports, abilities to generate incident mails, and really capture all of that data that's happening, sometimes with the data that caused the incident, and sometimes without. Again, it's going to be configurable, and we're going to cover that. So let's look at that pipeline. Where does this stuff run on the back end? On the screen, you can see a short diagram of the high-level view of what happens on the back end in the Exchange server. So we have a component around SMTP receive. We have a component that's called the categorizer, and then the mail falls through. For those of you who are very familiar with Exchange, this will be, you know, yes, of course, I know exactly how this works. For those of you who are not, just think of the categorizer as the place where a lot of this processing, a lot of this policy evaluation can happen naturally in the normal flow of mail without having to do anything special. So this functionality is integrated into ETRs, Exchange Transport Rules, and it does run in a categorizer, and it's integrated as a new predicate. And we'll cover what predicates are, but think of them as conditions. If I want to check a mail, I can say, show me or run this rule on any mail that is from this set of people. That's a condition. We've integrated this policy evaluation as run this rule whenever a message contains sensitive information. That is our condition. That is our new predicate. All of the extraction, the reason why this is highly efficient is all other extraction for checking for AV and anti-spam and a few other things already happens in that transport pipeline. So we've leveraged that, and instead of doing this breaking open of attachments and extracting text streams from them and really understanding the content multiple times, we've streamlined it, plugged into the right place in the back end in the system, and are now able to do this once for all the different kinds of processing. And this is something that both Microsoft and third-party partners could have done in the past via various transport agents. So this is a very natural place to plug in. And the idea is that we really don't want this to cost a lot of performance for anyone. So this is not going to slow down your system by any stretch of the imagination. The final bullet on this screen is also very important. The fact that this is integrated into Exchange Transport Rules, which have been around for many versions, means that it's a very mature and robust configurable technology. There are about 50 predicates or so, and there are a few dozen actions or a couple dozen actions that you can take. And again, by actions, if you remember the earlier slide with Protect, I mentioned you can take an action such as blocking, deleting, quarantine, encryption. Those are all actions. And that's you can use any action that you can use today on your transport rules. So you can really make this DLP system your own exactly the way it means for your business. All right. So let's look at what's in the box. So not only do we give you the tools, not only do we give you the platform, the system, there's more. Here's some steak knives, too. Policy templates. One thing that we really wanted to do as part of the Office system here, both on-prem and in the cloud, this is, again, everything I've talked about is available both on-prem and in the cloud, is provide you with these policy templates built in. Instead of giving you the system and saying, great, go configure it for whatever you need, we actually built a number of policy templates built in. You can see some on the screen. I think it's showing Israel financial data at the top and goes down to UK. But there's over 25 in the box today, where each one of these policy templates includes multiple sets of rules based on the common regulations that we've encountered. We've talked to many customers, we've talked to a number of analysts, we've talked to a number of consultants, and looked around the various geos, the geographies around the world, and looked at what kind of regulations are really critical or the top five in each one. And we expect this list to expand over time. At the same time, you can import DLP templates from partners. So if you have a vendor, if you have a top-tier consultant that they've been working on your business and information security aspects, they can author a policy that fits into this. They can also give you the business policy, and you can author the policy. But again, this is expandable. And then finally, you can create your own from scratch. You can just start with a blank page and literally add one regex, one entity, one classification at a time, and define the rules around those in order to build these policies. And we'll walk through all of this in a real demo to see how does this all interact with the system. So now let's dive deeper. We talked about policy templates as a collection of rules. Let's talk about DLP policy rules. As I've mentioned, this is built on top of Exchange Transport Rules. And for anyone who's used the Exchange Transport Rules in Exchange 2013 or 2010, the view that you see on the left of this slide should be very, very similar, very familiar. The idea here is this is all about how do I define that sensitive information? How do I discover what I've got in the system? And then what action do I take? I think I've covered the rest of this. So you can see on the top, you've got conditions. And I'm not sure if it's obvious for those of you who haven't seen transport rules before, but you can see that there's an add condition button. So you can have one or more conditions, and we will evaluate them in a very, you know, efficient manner. So for instance, if there's a really expensive condition and a really cheap condition, we will, or inexpensive condition, we will evaluate the inexpensive condition first, right? Just like any good compiler or processor would do in order to get through the rules. And these are evaluated on every message that you have. In this particular, you can see two conditions. The one says the recipient is located and the value is on the right, where it says outside the organization, and then the message contains sensitive information. That is that new predicate that is very specific to DLP. That is the new predicate that we added. In this case, you can see credit card number, and if you clicked on it, it'll open up and there'll be a lot of other values that you can add in there. And again, we'll look into that. The next section here is the action section. So once this condition matches, let's take a particular action. In this case, it is notify the sender with a policy tip. And Jack will go through the various options for that, since, again, you can notify them without blocking them. You can block them. You can provide override. There's multiple levels there. And then the second action here is generate incident report and send it to. And you can see the incident mailbox is the target in this particular one. So this one, we'll talk a little bit about it as part of our reporting and incident management. But again, it's a new action that we've added for DLP, where once the rule hits and I have this piece of sensitive data and I'm going to take some action, I really do need to tell someone about it, or I really do need to cut a ticket and connect with some kind of service desk management system potentially. This is one of those areas where you can tie in. And then finally, there's exceptions. And in this particular case, we don't have an exception configured, but the idea here is you might want to say, well, we actually expect the finance department to send up to 5 credit cards at a time. So if they do that, we're just going to log it. We're not going to notify them. We're not going to block them. It's normal. If they happen to send 1,000 credit cards, or let's say more than 10 at a time, that's not normal. We'll take a different action. But those are the exceptions where you can manage it. Maybe you want to let your VPs do whatever they want. Maybe you actually want to let everyone but your VPs do whatever they want. So again, thinking from a security, from a compliance perspective, those exceptions are really the way you can manage it. And this is standard groups, users, the standard way that you manage an exchange with an AD backing, Active Directory backing. So I talked a little bit about the actions, and I mentioned a number of them. You can see this represented as a dial. It's really about how does my business manage that risk? So the different enforcement, the different actions that you can take are really a representation or one way to represent the way you think about risk of a particular type of sensitive content or a particular type of action that the user is doing. For instance, if they send something sensitive internally, maybe I never want to block them. we're going to let employees roam free. Maybe if they're a vendor, maybe if their alias has, you know, at Microsoft, an alias that has V dash is a vendor. So the alias itself has the letter V and dash. You could look for that and you can say, if it's a V dash, I actually do want to enforce it even if it's inside. So again, you can turn this dial and you can see the dial is set to alert where you're only notifying, you're only auditing potentially. You can see the dial moves up, and you can now say, well, in certain cases, I do want to encrypt. I want to take an action, ensure that TLS is there, or encrypt using IRM, or some other mechanism like exchange-hosted encryption, for instance. Maybe I want to turn the dial even more, and in this case, review. Review comes to mind, moderation. No mail that meets all of these criteria can leave the organization without a second party. Whether it's that person's manager or a group of people, somebody has to say, yes, I'm okay with sending this out. So you can add that kind of approval process in there. And then finally, the ultimate for messaging, the ultimate action here is block. I'm sorry, that kind of thing cannot leave. Maybe if I find an attachment that has over 1,000 credit cards or over 1,000 social security numbers or health IDs or employee records, maybe there's never an activity that should be allowed to take that action. So we just block that. So there's always the extreme cases. But again, the whole idea is it's a dial, and you can turn it any which way, and you can turn it on a per rule basis. You can turn it on a per count of item basis. Okay, so drilling even deeper. We're going deeper and deeper. We'll stop after this slide for a moment for questions. So sensitive content detection. I said there are rules in the box. We want to get you started. We don't want you to have to say, great, now staring at a blank box, and what do I do? Not only do we have over 25 policies, which are collections of those rules, as well as their actions and suggestions, we actually also have the building blocks in the box. So we have, I think we have 46 that's showing currently in the box, one of 46. And these are, again, we went to the various customers, consultants internally, and looked around the world and picked from a variety of geographies. And I have a slide at the end which actually shows you the different geographies and the types of regulations that we were looking at when we came up with this list. And I'm sure if somebody has one that's missing here or missing in that list, love to talk to you afterwards, love to hear the feedback, because again, over time we will increase this, as well as we expect you and our partners to provide additional value here. So we've got a bunch of predefined in-the-box entities, and this is the sensitive content detection entities. And you can see on the left, it's got its name, the name, and on the right you've got the publisher's Microsoft Corporation. The reason the publisher is there is because you can't import a third-party entity. You can, if someone is an expert at a particular vertical in a particular, medical field in a country that we didn't happen to put this in the box, they can create this, they can provide it to you, they can provide it to us, they can import it into the system, they can act on your behalf if you delegate the administrative rights to them. And they can add all of these predefined rules and provide the specific detection that will allow you to catch that content that matters to you for that particular regulation. Not only is it the regular expressions, but it's also the ability to run various checksums and other functionality. So let's look at an example here. What does the content look like and what would hit? On the left side, you can see the content analysis, and we'll just walk down the left half of the slide one by one. So in this case, you can see that there's a name, a visa number, and an expiration. So if we were to do a regular regex analysis, this would show up as a 16-digit number, and anyone who's looking for a 16-digit number would trap it. That's the standard way that many solutions have done that today, and there's a fair amount of false positive in that, because there could be other 16-digit numbers. So we actually add on top of that, we've got some functional analysis. And if you look at the third box down, you can see that the first number would match a credit card for us because it does pass Lund's algorithm in this case. So there's an algorithm called Lund's, L-U-N-S, and it is the way that all credit card numbers, both 15 and 16 digits around the world, are computed for their checksum digit. And the second number here, the 1, 2, 3, 4, repeated 4 times, will not pass that algorithm. So if your system only looked for regexes that were 16 digits long, you'd have a false positive here and you'd be stopping somebody from doing something. If your system has the additional checksums, it now can actually detect the false positive here and it will not be affected by it. But what if that's not enough? Or what if we do want to catch some other types and those types don't have a function such as Lund's algorithm? Well, that's where we have additional evidence, and that's the fourth box down, where it could be that you're looking for a keyword. Like in this case, the word visa is near the number. Or a regular expression for the date is near the number. So what we've added is the ability to do proximity-based evidence. So this is supportive evidence. So not only am I looking for that 16-digit number, I'm also looking for other hints, other data things in the content that might elevate my confidence, might increase my confidence that this is really a credit card and this is something I do need to worry about, and it's a particular sensitive data type. And again, I'm talking about credit card in this case. This could be an employee number. This could be a financial statement. On a financial statement, you might have the bank name. You might have other evidence, other keywords, other things that you could look for within proximity of the regex or the entity that you're looking for in the first place. And this allows us to reduce the false positive rate in the system. So at the end of the day, you have the verdict on the bottom. You can see we've talked about that in the credit card example. We do use the checksum. And the two examples on the right, basically the first one is a credit card and would hit, and you can see by the subject line, this content would match for credit cards. And the content on the bottom happens to be, you know, someone's booking code. Obviously, we've created this example, but there are plenty. You can probably think of your own business. There's plenty of examples out there. For instance, I've ran into a company which their employee ID looks like a social security number in the US, but is never a social security number. So again, you want to add keywords, you want to provide examples to reduce the false positive rate here, so your accuracy and your precision are much higher. Promise to stop for questions on the last slide, so I'll stop now. The question was, how do we handle attachments? So we actually open up attachments within the processing pipeline as well as on the client. As you saw in the demo for the policy tips, those attachments got highlighted in yellow. They get cracked open, and we actually scan all of that. By default, the follow-on question that I'm sure folks are thinking about is, what file types do you support? Obviously, we support the core Office file types and multiple versions of those. We also support PDF and a number of others. So there's about, I think, 20 or so, maybe a little over 20. I can't remember the exact number, but one of the resources, one of the links at the end of this session actually has the link to all the file types we support. We also support this in an extensible fashion. So for Exchange Server, any iFilter extractor, basically iFilter is one of the Microsoft technologies. It's an open platform that allows a third party to write a content extractor that can open a particular file and extract it into a stream. So any third party, and there are a number of them, that write iFilters, you could choose to install that into your on-prem Exchange Server, and then you would support a specific file type that we don't support out of the box, for instance. So that would be one other option. I saw another hand back there, and then we'll go to the back. Sorry, can you repeat that louder? So the question is, how do we deal with password-protected files? So we actually choose not to do anything that would count as malicious. So we do not load anything that breaks a password open. So given that it's the intent was that it's an opaque file, we leave that opaque and we do not scan it. Now, before we jump on that, we did think about this model, and we decided to provide you, the administrator, the ability to say, I will take a different action if the pipeline does not understand this file type. For instance, if I understand it and I find sensitive information, I can take action A. And if I encounter a password-protected file that I can't scan, I will take action B. And action B could be quarantine it for or request specific approval, let a human jump into the process, or just block it and decide, I don't want password protected files to go in there. We felt that that was a better approach than kind of using any variety of practically hacking tools to break through brute force passwords. There is no, you know, backdoor to password protected files. You just have to crack the algorithm, and it depends on how complex or simple it is. Does that answer the question? Okay. And was there another one at the back? Yes. Oh, okay. Look at that. 2 for 1. Any other questions before we keep going? Great. Okay. So moving forward, let's take a look at how all of this gets configured and how this gets managed, as well as the reporting. Jack?
Cool. Thanks, Asaf. So now we're going to go back and really see what were some of the backend configurations and what power do you have as the IT pros to define these policies and configure all the things we've been talking about so far. So again, because we're still looking at Contoso Exports, which is an Office 365 client, they're actually running this in the cloud, and this is kind of their landing page for administration. So here I'm going to go ahead and actually focus on Exchange. I'm logged in as Sarah Davis, who also happens to be the administrator. I'm going to go to the compliance management, which is where DLP resides, and the data loss prevention tab. The first thing that happens is here we can see here are the policies that are actually in the box and have been deployed for this tenant, specifically Contoso Exports. And the first thing we do is provide you a high-level view. You can see there's the little red points. Those are actually giving you status indicators of what kind of detections have been occurring in the last 24 hours. So a very quick view of what has been happening in the system. And you can see how many matches we had across the various policies. So these were the policies Asaf was talking about somebody deploying and actually putting these in the organization. So we can see that for PCI data security standard, we have 7 matches, 2 overrides, and 2 false positives. So 2 users have overridden in the last 24 hour the messages, and 2 people have reported things that are false positives. That was one of those buttons in the toast that popped up on policy tips that said report as false positive. Obviously, as you're first deploying the solution, it's very important to monitor this and see, am I getting a lot of false positives? Am I getting a lot of overrides? Because you may actually have to tune the rules and the definitions to match your organization needs. So it's really helping you learn about how the system is being used. Now, when you get first here, there's multiple ways of how you could actually provide and configure this. So you can go ahead and go new DLP policy from template. And this is where you would create a new policy based on the 30 templates that Asaf referenced in his discussion. You can import a new DLP policy, and this is really one where you have a vendor or you yourself have custom written a policy template and want to be able to use that in the system. Let's say you're tracking employee IDs. Employee IDs are not really globally definable data, so it's not something we can build into the system. But obviously, we want to make sure that our system can support those and can work in your environment. So you would point to a local file. This is really an XML definition, and all of this is on TechNet, of how to configure a policy template, and then you would be able to import this. Once you import it and create it, it would act like any of the policies that we have pre-built ourselves in the system. And then the other option here was policy templates. So policy templates, if I go ahead and start creating these, is here we get a list of the various policy templates really kind of across the globe. There's about 30 of them here that are really a starting point for deployment. And it's really easy. All I would need to do is put a name to this and really click Save to actually create a new policy template in the system. Finally, the last option was I can actually create a new policy template from scratch, which means I'm going to create an empty policy and craft the rules right into it through the user interface. So what does one of these policy templates look like? So I'm going to click on this one, which is one that has been probably used and hitting mostly in our demonstration. So the first thing it has, just a name and the description of what the policy is. The next interesting thing is this area where it says, what is the mode of the policy? And there's three options: enforce, enforce with policy tips, which is really the end user education, and just audit. And the reason is we're trying to provide a model of how we see people deploying this solution in their organization. So we would actually, in our best practices, encourage you to first deploy the system in an audit-only mode. This way, we will collect the data, but will not actually take any actions. And it's really for you to audit and see how the system would behave, so that when you turn it on, you will have a minimal impact on your organization. You can also learn. Most of the customers I talk to are pretty convinced they don't have any sensitive data flowing in their organization. Well, a lot of them have an interesting surprise when they turn this on and see what kind of data is actually flowing. This becomes important because it will also help you understand that you may have to alter your policies differently for different departments, and you may actually have business needs for sending some of that information within specific scenarios. And this is where the power of the transport rules and the policy framework comes in, where you get to tailor your policies to match your organizational usage and needs. Being able to select these options means you don't, if you have a rule that says, you know, if I match credit cards, it's coming from HR, encrypt or even block, for example, if it's beyond a certain threshold. By putting this only in audit mode, we would audit that we would normally block, but at this point, we're just auditing, and you don't actually have to modify the policy definitions as you move through the phases of deployment. The second phase would be, let us now notify the end users so they can start learning what the policies are, but we're still not going to take any actions that would alter the communications and actually change the interaction model. So the interesting stuff is when we go into rules, we see that this policy is actually made up of a number of rules that work together to provide the policy enforcement actions and detections that you have designed. So this is based on our standard policy, but it includes a couple additional interesting rules. So I'm going to start off with inside organization mail. This is one of the rules that kicked in when I was sending an email to Tony, who's internally inside the organization. So first thing I've done is I've selected that the sender is located inside the organization. And if you can see, there's really a big richness of how we can identify either the user, the context of the operation, or the content of the operation. And I won't go through all of these, but these are all documented on TechNet, and you have quite a bit of flexibility. So the sender is located inside the organization, and the recipient is also inside the organization. And what we're going to do is look for messages that contain sensitive information, in this case, credit cards. But this is where I can go in and actually go much deeper into configuring and defining this policy. So here we're saying it has to have at least a minimum of 2 credit cards, up to any, and this notion of confidence, which we'll try to get to in a minute. I can go and add additional sensitive types, and this is where the 40-plus classification definitions that we have built in pop up. If also you've imported your own, you would see these in here, such as employee number. So I can easily scroll down, you know, look for, let's say, UK electronic roll number, add this in, and now the policy would actually be detecting any of these content. I can further quantify this and say, you know what, here specifically, we want this just to happen when the minimum count is a specific or maximum count. In our example, we're just looking for more than 2 credit cards. The next thing that happens is we have our actions section, and here we have just a simple one action. It's set of notify the sender. And again, if you look in here, there's multiple options of how you can configure how we interact with the system. So again, we're doing one configuration on the back end of the server that will affect both how the policy is interpreted in Exchange Server and how it's interpreted on the client. So there's really one point of management for you to worry and keep up to date moving forward. So the various options that exist here is, one is notify the sender, but allow them to send. That's the kind of policy tip that's really an education. Next one is just block the message, purely reject. And there's three types of, or two types of overrides, and ability to also then report false positives. There's an override that allows them to enter the text, which is the one we saw in the first demo. And there's another one that basically just allows them to override, but they don't even have to bother entering any data. And that's really for you to decide how you want to communicate with your users and what kind of experience you want to be able to provide to them. All right, so that's that rule. I want to quickly cover two more. There's two for low and high count for sending things outside the organization. Again, if I look at this, the structure will be very similar, and these rules are quite simple. I'm just saying, if the recipient's located outside the organization, again, look for credit card. Here, I have count between 1 and 4. Again, I can configure this. And if the count's between 1 and 4, I'm going to notify them. If I open the other rule, which is the high count, it's pretty much defined the same way, except my credit card is now from 5 to any. And this is how I was able to easily achieve the capability where, as the user added more sensitive data, we went from a simple notify to now an override notification where the user has to perform additional actions. The other thing that the other action that we've added that's pretty common within our DLP solution is this notion of generate incident reports. And we haven't looked at that, but what that is a real-time notification at time of detection. Think of it as an email that gets sent that contains the details of what was detected. And you get to specify, you know, just an SMTP address of what's the destination of this notification, and then you can define what goes in it. And we provide you a number of controls where you get to decide how sensitive are the people who are receiving, what kind of sensitive information I want to share with who's receiving this. So you may have tiers of people who are actually analyzing this data. You may have ones who have least access, and then you probably would drop things like original mail or matching content, or you can really provide a full set of information. So based on this, what we call GIR, if I go back to my mailbox, you can see that here's an example of what this notification looks like. And this is actually something that was generated in real time this morning as part of my interaction with Tony. So there's information about the message, where it was sent to. We also capture things like the override. This was the one where I typed in. We noticed we found credit card, the count was 29, confidence 85. And here's actually specific rules we hit. So we hit our Australia financial, and we also hit our PCI DSS. And here we can actually see the specific data that was matched, which is this. And in addition, provide some context that said, here's some additional content that was in the document that also was around the sensitive content. This is what you would use for tuning to be able to see, is this really what I'm expecting to match? Is this really what I should be triggering my rules on? All right, so in the interest of time, I'll skip this. I'll skip looking at specific actions and predicates. But you can see from an actions perspective, there's about 20 or so different actions you can take. Again, from pure encryption to notification to anything in the middle. It's really the spectrum that Asaf talked about of being able to tailor your policies to specific instances. The other interesting part is the fact that, again, you get to decide how are you treating your DLP deployment? Is this a best effort where I'm going to scan this, show to my auditor that I have a solution in place, or for my perspective, is it something really critical? If scanning fails, what am I going to do? And this is where you can decide that, you know what, if we have an error during processing, I'm actually going to defer the messages. I'm not going to let the message go through because I don't know what's in it. I don't know if we failed because we don't understand the content type, something timed out, or something else, and we'll retry those operations. Or we can just do a best effort analysis of the content. All right, so in addition to just this, I'm going to switch and talk a little bit about reporting. So when I first logged in, I showed a high-level view of this is kind of what the system is occurring right now, I can actually go in here and look at various reports. There's actually four reports we have built in out of the box for both incoming and outgoing mail that allow you to view both by policy and specific rules that have been hit. So if I go to this one, which is really looking for policy hits for outgoing mail, this will load up and actually provide us a view of per policy. So if I look at this, let's say over the last 30 days, this will bring up the data and show us from different policies what are the hits. And there's three basic lines. What are the policy matches? What are the overrides? And what are the false positives? And you can see, being a demo environment, I've kind of had areas of activities, potentially other demos, that have triggered this. I can filter this based on policies to say which policies are actually hitting the most. So I can see for PCI DSS, you know, between somewhere around 6.3, 6.4, we had about 50 detections. You know, about 5 of those were overrides, and then we had a small number of false positives, looks like 1. Similarly, on 6.10, there's 1 line, but that's actually because we have both policy matches and overrides being done at the same time. And we can export this as a table, or just look at the top matches here. And you can look this per policy, or also drill in and look for outbound versus inbound mails. Now, that's one level of kind of summary information, but I may actually want to provide a much more detailed set of informations from a reporting perspective. So this just kind of goes back to the reporting main page and shows you the richness of other reports we offer around mail flow, protection, rules, which is again standard transport rules, DLP, and link. If I clicked on here, I can actually download an Excel plugin, and I already have done that. And the Excel plugin actually gets you the ability to interact at a very detailed level, where I don't want to look at the summary. I want to actually look at potentially specific mail and senders who have been participating. So this shows you, unfortunately, there isn't a huge amount of data in here. So there is different kind of views you can get for DLP, good mail, rules. This kind of provides you a traffic summary. What I'm going to really focus on is the data loss prevention capabilities, which would allow you to provide a set of drill-ins where you can drill in for policy false positives, policy matches, policy overrides. Here you can see on 6/26, I had 9 policy matches. I can then drill in by various dates, by various even rules, and then what kind of severity actions or audit actions. For each rule, I can say, is this a severe failure or match condition or a risk, or is this something low that I don't have to worry about? And then further, you can even drill in based on specific actions that were applied. And these are some common actions that we see our users using for data loss prevention in terms of actions being taken. Now, if I really go into the details here, is I can actually keep drilling in and get to what are the specific messages that have been hitting and are offending content, hitting our DLP policies. So by sender, recipient, domain, subject. So here we're going to see there's various policies. So let me drill in on just PCI DSS. And we can see there's various transport rules. You know what? I don't want the ones going inside the organization, so I'm going to look only at PCI DSS external with high count. So we see that Sarah Davis has been really the only person who's been sending, again, to one individual, Tony, messages with high count that are matching. And we can even scroll further and see what was matched, in this case, just credit cards, what were the counts, 28, and even looking further, what were message sizes, but more interestingly, what were the actions taken as part of the policies. So it's really a deep level of content. And the nice thing is making this available through an Excel interface provides you a rich set of ability to do analytics on this information. Thank you.
All right, let's switch back. I saw that there's a couple of questions. I'll ask you just to hold it for one moment, but we will get to those. And it looks like we might have to fire Sarah because she's causing our data loss.
Yes.
So there's a couple of slides here. I'm not actually going to talk through all of them because we included them here so you can have them as a slide in case you wanted to pull that out and kind of look at it and show others at later. You can see that this one is the incident report, and it actually shows you the different areas that Jack called out. So we're not going to repeat that particular piece of data. And let's move to the next one. The reporting and auditing. This is one of those things where I don't know if we made it clear. This is the only piece that is different between on-prem and in the cloud. So Exchange 2013 on-prem does not get this view. It does have all the other reports. It does have the incident management, but it does not have this view because this view is coming from Office 365. These four reports in the cloud. This is basically a roll-up view and allows you to do the drill-ins. Now, since this is fully documented and we do have many partners, we've already had some partners work on the on-prem solution. In this particular case, I believe, let's jump one ahead. Oh, sorry. We'll jump ahead to message stats. So message stats from Dell has actually already taken the initiative and provided a solution that gives you the same kind of views, the same kind of reports as in the cloud, but they provide it for your on-prem solution. I do know that there are a number of other vendors, ISVs, that are building these on-prem reports, and you yourself can also use the data and build that directly into whether it's simple spreadsheets or your current reporting solution. So that's all available, documented and can be pulled out. I don't have anyone else that I can kind of highlight from a release product perspective, but that's more of a marketing conversation. The one other point that we kind of skipped through is I promised to show the content areas. And in this case, you can see that we've kind of broken it up into a number of countries, which almost represent the regions around them as well, because we find that when you have a country, the companies both in that country as well as the surrounding countries seem to all be under regulation when they're working in those countries. Pretty much PII, financial, and health were the three large regulatory categories that we focused on when we were looking for various entities and policies to put in the box. And the ones that you can see listed up there are definitely the ones that came up most often around the world. I do know that there are a number of different, I know someone has come up to us for certain Polish identifiers from Poland, and FERPA, F-E-R-P-A, which is an educational regulation in the U.S. A number of them may make the ever-expanding list of regulations over time, and a number of them we will hold back where if it doesn't make sense to provide that to everyone, it doesn't make sense to invest in that, we would be able to point you to the right people who can do this as a third party, or you yourself can take on the task of modifying either existing policies and tuning them or creating new policies. All of it is documented. This is an example of what the policy file looks like. And you can see that this is all in TechNet, available today. You can take a look at it. You can actually take the policies that we have in the system and modify those and re-import them as new policies or modified policies to be able to start from something as opposed to start from scratch. And you can change both the policy rules themselves. You can customize what actions I'm taking, all the things that we've shown, or the classification rules themselves for the entities. You know, when we say social security number, what does it mean? When we say credit card number, what does it mean? Those are fairly well regulated. But what about a health record or a health number for your particular country or your particular business? Maybe you've got different ways to prevent false positives because of the way that you record patient IDs, which are not standardized anywhere in the world. It's unique to every hospital group. And then the integration, again, the incident reports that you saw can be directly into a service ticketing system, as well as just pure custom reporting solutions. So this is kind of a recap. And as folks look at this, The key message here is we're providing an end-to-end system. We are extremely interested in the user education and empowerment piece at the same time that we provide you with a highly secure back-end system. So it's the full gamut. It's both sides of the equation. And we don't actually believe you can continue in DLP without supporting both the security side of the house, which is the traditional side, as well as empowering the productivity side. Because without that productivity, your user will try to go around your security. With that, we're going to take a couple questions. Question answered. Look at that. So please, we'll stick around for more questions. I'll actually, a couple minutes maybe here, and if there's more than that, we'll migrate outside to let the next presenter get on there. Please give us the feedback. If you have feedback about the session, if you have feedback about the logistics, if you have feedback about anything we have on TechNet, you can see there's a number of track resources, as well as feedback about the content in the product itself. So if something came to mind and you said, wait, I really want this regulation, I really think it's important for an entire industry that we haven't considered, we really want to hear that today or later. There's ways to contact us through all of those links. And I'll leave the there's related content, and then there's the QR code. So you can scan that if you want to start giving feedback about the session. Thanks, everyone.